Let's go ahead this evening and begin with prayer. Father, we are thankful again for this day and for the blessings that have been in it already. And thank you for all the things that you have done for us in Christ Jesus our Lord. And we thank you for this precious book that we have tonight that we are all gathered around, believing it is your inspired, holy, infallible word. Pray that you would lead us as we go into it tonight. Amen. We're going to look at Proverbs chapter 3 tonight. My plan tonight is that we will just rummage through it a little bit and just get some basic principles from it without attempting to cover all the subject matter in it. You could easily turn Proverbs chapter 3 into 6 very long sermons if you were to deal with the individual passages in it individually and more completely. But tonight I just want to read the chapter and I want to talk about some of the things in it and get some ideas from it. It was a few years ago that I decided, when I read Proverbs chapter 3, that this was the chapter in the Bible, the one chapter in the Bible standing out above the rest of the Bible, in my opinion, that should be my family's chapter. And I said, I'm going to put this chapter on my living room wall, the whole chapter. But it's been quite a few years now and it has not hit the wall yet. So, I feel kind of bad about that. It should be on my wall. But tonight, I'm going to speak to the two teenage type bratty girls in here, and the little three boys, and the rest of you who are gathered together. What I believe is, we could say this chapter is the guidance for the home. And it's pretty complete, actually, when you go through it. But let's go ahead and read it to start. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord and with all thine heart. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty and thy presses burst out with new wine. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding, for the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay hold upon her, and happy is every one that retaineth her. The Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth, and by understanding he established the heavens. By his knowledge the depths are broken up, and the clouds drop down dew. My son, let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. So shall they be life unto thy soul, and grace to thy neck. Then shalt thou walk in thy way safely, and thy foot shall not stumble. When thou liest down, thou shalt not be afraid. Yea, thou shalt lie down, and thy sleep shall be sweet. Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it cometh. For the Lord shall be thy confidence, and shall keep thy foot from being taken. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. Say not unto thy neighbor, Go and come again, and tomorrow I will give, when thou hast it by thee. Devise not evil against thy neighbor, seeing he dwelleth securely by thee. Strive not with a man without cause, if he hath done thee no harm. Envy not the oppressor, and choose none of his ways. For the froward is abomination to the Lord, but his secret is with the righteous. The curse of the Lord is in the house of the wicked, but he blesseth the habitation of the just. Surely he scorneth the scorners, but he giveth grace unto the lowly. The wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the promotion of fools. Now, I want you to notice the first two verses of this chapter, my son. If you will look back to the beginning of chapter 2, it says, my son. And if you would read chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, he says, my son, over and over and over and over and over again in these first few chapters of the book of Proverbs. I believe it continues. I'm not sure if actually 8 and 9 continue much of my son or not, but at least through Proverbs 7, this is as almost as a father writing to his child. Now, it means so much more to us tonight because this was not just Solomon's advice to his son. This is God's commandment to us. And we do need to think about it in both lights, because if we think only of this in the fact that this is God's commandments to us, we will miss some of the importance of the chapters, because even though it is God's commandment to us, this was Solomon's commandment to his son. And if you will go to the beginning of chapter 4 and read a couple of verses there, he says, Hear ye, children, the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, Let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. And we know who's writing this. His name is Solomon. He became the king of Israel. And his father was David, who was the king of Israel. And Solomon is not here making up something that he wants his family to observe and do. Solomon is not creating a household rule book for his family, but rather Solomon is passing on in these chapters to his son what he got from his father, who no doubt got it from his father, who got it from his father, who got it from his father. Because as you look into the life of David, we find from the time of Boaz on through Solomon, we find godly heritage being passed on. We find God working in the lives of these families, and we find God's blessing. So, Solomon isn't giving us something here in these chapters that were new revelations to Solomon. Solomon didn't learn something new and say, this is how we should live. The basic things of the book of Proverbs, if you want to go all the way to the end of the book, all the way, beginning to end, the basic things of the book of Proverbs are the very foundational things of the wisdom of God on this earth that every human being from Adam until the Antichrist should follow. Basic basic things of right and wrong. So we have, in these two first words, my son, we have some ideas that we should think about for a minute. If it is true that Solomon should say to his son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. If Solomon should say that to his son, then it is true that Solomon has no business saying anything to his son that is not of God. This is a very important point, because as we look out over the sea of mess everywhere in life, and you see families being destroyed all the time, families being destroyed, and sometimes you have parents who are telling their children right things and children refuse to listen to those right things. And sometimes you have parents telling children wrong things and the children are struggling wanting to do the right thing and the parents are telling them to do the wrong thing. Most of the time you have neither of those two situations. You just simply have the parents telling their children a mix of right and wrong things, and you have the children listening with mixed ears sometimes to the right things and sometimes to the wrong things and sometimes their own way. That's the typical family. But as you go into Christian circles and we're trying to find godly families, it oftentimes we just find it messed up. And we find families where the father has decided that he is going to be like King Solomon, demanding obedience of not only his family, but everyone who looks at him. Just about, it seems, sometimes. And it makes for struggles in the home. Because now we've got a whole bunch of well-behaved, good children in the family who should be obeying their father because he's their father. They should be obeying their father because God says they should be obeying their father. And they should be obeying their father because it's safe to obey your father. And he's causing trouble for them. And there's no doubt in this world that the complications of relationships in a family are dramatic. There's no doubt about it. But if we all can get biblical of God with the things that we do, it will iron out most of the issues. And so that is absolutely the most important starting point in this verse. If you are a parent and you want to have the right to say, my son, forget not my law, then you better know what God's law is, and that better be what you are teaching. You have no right to teach anything but God's law if you are requiring obedience to yourself. I have said this before, and I do not hesitate to say it again. The only authority God gave to man is the authority to care for God's people under God's direction. That is the only authority God has given to man or woman. So, as we say, my son, we better be saying something that is true. But then, supposing that we do have someone saying to us, my son, my daughter, listen to me. It is the rest of this chapter is taken up with the things that we should, how we should be listening, what we should be being told, and the reasons we should be listening to it. Because verse 2 says, length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Length of days, long life and peace. It is one of the most common things when you find young people. They want to compare what you do with what the fruit of is, what you do for the next day or 30 days or year. And they want to thereby make a judgment as to the rightness or the wrongness of the path they have chosen. So, for example, if you tell a young person, you ought not to go to that liberal college, there's nothing of God there. It will potentially destroy your life. They look at you and they say, well, I was in a situation like that before and it didn't hurt me. I did something. My friend did something. I've seen this happen before and it didn't hurt. Fact of the matter is, we measure whether or not a person should go to a college and be under the influence of the ungodly. We measure things by eternity. We don't measure those things by time. And if you, as a young person, who have barely the ability to discern the difference between right and wrong, you have absolutely no ability to discern the difference between what a wrong course that is just a tiny little bit wrong right now will do to a person by the end of their lives. You have no ability to see that. In fact, as a matter of fact, older people, church elders, grandpas, grandmas, oftentimes don't have the ability to see things like that. But as a matter of fact, we make our decisions on the difference between right and wrong not based anywhere nearly as much, though sometimes it's a small player, but not based anywhere nearly as much as what we envision the fruit of it being, as we base it on rock solid right and wrong. Some things are wrong if there is no evil fruit visible. Some things are wrong because God says they're wrong. And so, when Solomon looks at his son, he says, "My son, forget not my law, let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee." Solomon is not talking when he says length of days and long life. He is not talking about the next 5 years of his son's life. He's talking about the years from 60 to 100. He's talking about out there in the distance when wrong choices in life start adding up and coming against you. You know, let's just imagine, for an example, there's a little person here who wants to do their own thing. They don't want to listen to anybody's advice. Let's just imagine that we've got this person here. Now, if this person says, I'm going to make that person my friend, and some caring Christian comes along, dad or something, somebody comes along and he says, you know, you shouldn't be friends with this person. That person's going to be a bad influence on you. Now, the fact of the matter is, this person will say, I am strong. I can be friends with that person. I know what the person's weaknesses are. They aren't going to influence me. I'm going to help this person in this relationship. You can come up with 1,000 arguments. Some of the arguments that come up in situations like this are usually stupidity. But let's imagine you have a few good ones. All right. Let's just imagine that being friends with this person now puts you in a camp of another set of people that you wouldn't have known if you weren't friends with this person. And you end up, because of your friendship with this person, getting married to a person you never would have known had you not been friends with that person. And guess what? If you're the kind of a person who doesn't listen when you're told something to do, you are the kind of person who will not probably be listening to anything you are told to do for the rest of your life, unless it sounds good to you. That's the way it goes. You don't listen, you're a person who doesn't listen. If you can't listen, you're not going to listen later. And so the list just starts adding up. So now we have gotten this person. He was not influenced by this bad person, we say. Okay, he says. He marries a person that he wouldn't have known if he hadn't been friends with this person. And that person he married was not a bad person. It was a good person, okay? But it was a lower quality person than he would have married had he stuck over here in this circle of friends. Okay, let's say that. Now, we have got influence that has started at age 18 in this person's life that is not horrible, but it is not the best. And as life begins to go on, and things that would not have been unless something else had been, begin to stack up. And things in life, everything you do in life has a consequence. Every road you walk takes you somewhere. And those things begin to add up, one after another. Down the road, you're 45 years old. That person you married isn't the person you married. Because though they were living okay when you married them, your church circles that you've been in, your friends that you've been in, haven't fed you enough, and that person's spirituality has slipped. And now he's not living the same life he was living when you married him. And things went down one little step at a time. Don't anybody sit in this room and say this isn't going to happen to me, because this situation that I am talking about hopefully never happens to a person that is in this room. But there is a million circumstances like this in life that can happen to you. And if this one doesn't, another one will. And so now we're 45 years old and we're getting a divorce. You say, no. Good people don't get divorces. You know, good people walk roads that take them to divorce. And good people can't necessarily prevent divorces when they have been on the wrong road for 20 years. Sometimes there's consequences to choices. And I'm just telling you what Solomon is talking about. I hope he's not talking to any person in this room, but he is talking to millions of people all over the country who aren't willing to listen. And when he says length of days, long life and peace, he's not talking about the first 40 years of your life. He's talking about the end. He's talking about when you begin to age, when the things that are stacking up in your life stack up wrong instead of stacked up right. That's what he's talking about. Because the fact of the matter is, you can, if you choose to, you can do lots of very detrimental things. Let's talk health food for just a moment. I think you guys all understand this one, even if you disagree with it. You can eat at McDonald's every day. You can eat all the sugar you want. You can do whatever you want when you are young with very little of it affecting you. But you turn 40, and all of a sudden, you get affected more easily by things that happen. Health isn't as robust and as perfect as it was. You get 60, you're in the hospital, you're having operations, you're on drugs, all sorts of things are going wrong. You get 65, you die. It's not, those are random numbers. They don't repeat exactly the same in everybody's life. But the fact of the matter is, there are things you can do when you are young that do not affect you. But you stack those up one day after another. They become something that is too big for you to take care of anymore. A young person can't see that. They can't know that. They've never been down the road before. They don't know what happens as life goes on. They don't know these things. That's why It is of absolute importance that we read this verse. My son, forget not my law. Don't forget my law. It's not my law. It was my dad's. My dad is the one who taught me this. I wouldn't have known it if David hadn't taught me. I wouldn't have known it. My dad wouldn't have known it. Now speaking of me, I have to stand here and say, I didn't always think perfectly of my parents when I was growing up. I never had a terrible relationship with them, but I didn't always think perfectly about them. But I can stand here tonight and say, I only learned good things from them. The same things they taught me are what I'm passing down to my children. The same things. I'm not teaching my children something that I learned. I'm teaching my children something that my dad whipped into me. I wouldn't have learned it if he hadn't. So this is our very basic starting point in life. But verse 3 comes on just as importantly. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck, write them upon the table of thine heart. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Let not mercy and truth. These two things we love to put up against each other all the time. We like to be a person who is truthful, who is always right, and who smashes people to bits if they're in our way. Or we like to be a person who's solid love and doesn't require anything of anybody. But the fact of the matter is, we need absolutely at all times to have mercy and truth bound to our necks, written on the tables of our hearts. If we can do that, here is the blessing. Thou shalt find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Cora, would you like to shut the next one too? Verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. So here we have it. Next thing in life. How smart are you? I know you guys aren't admitting this publicly right now. How smart you are when you are standing in front of a crowd is a completely different level of smart than you are when you're sitting alone in your bedroom. When you're standing in front of a crowd and there's people looking at you with glaring eyes, you're not so smart. You'll say, oh yeah, I need leadership. I don't know everything. Sometimes I need help. But when you're sitting alone in your bedroom, you are the wisest person on the face of the earth. And the way we know that is the fact that you make choices to do the things you want to do when everybody you know tells you not to. That's how we know you. That's how we know you believe yourself to be the smartest person on earth. Every person on earth at one moment in their life has those acts going on. At one point or another, you choose to do the thing you want to do in spite of the fact that everybody else told you don't do it. But we're supposed to trust in the Lord and lean not unto our own understanding. Now, interestingly, if we're supposed to trust in the Lord, what does trusting in the Lord have to do with not leaning to our own understanding? Well, I think we're talking largely to do with the Bible here right now. Because if we trust in the Lord, we trust that He knows when He said something. And so we listen to what He says instead of following our feelings about what is right. But I do not hesitate to say that one of the things that God says is for children to listen to their parents. So you got to bring that in. In all thy ways acknowledge Him. And if you're going to acknowledge God in all your ways, one of the things you're going to do as a young person is listen to your parents. Remember now, we're talking what the Scriptures here say. We are not talking in these absolute statements about the possibility of exceptions to a rule where a parent is leading you astray or away from God. There are always exceptions to this basic principle when the father is not teaching the son the things of God. There's always a time where you have to walk away from your parents to serve God. I shouldn't say, there's not always a time for all children, but there is a time sometimes in life that some children have to make choices like that. We're not referring to those times when we say, oh, look to your parents. Those are exceptional situations. They are not the normal. So he says, be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. Don't think you know. You should be scared of God. Because when God says something, it doesn't matter if what God talks about doesn't look scary to you. It still is if God says something about it. There's bad consequences that will happen to things that God says we should not do. So depart from evil, because, verse 8, it shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. Now I like verses 9 and 10, where he says, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. I think that this, if you're taking this chapter here as the guidance for your own home, and this is the rules that you're going to live by, there's two things we'll understand about these couple of verses. But we'll take it first, the first one first, and we'll get to the second one in a minute. When he says, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase, that should be a family principle, a lifestyle of every human being on earth, where God comes before the other things in life. And Job did not hesitate to say that he esteemed the words of God more than his necessary food. If the words of God say, honor the Lord with your first fruits, then if you are hungry and you get something, it's still God first. It's still God first. Because it is in that situation when you honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of all your increase, it's in that situation that your barns will be full. He does not promise this to people who do not honor the Lord. Something that I learned, I didn't learn it, I just felt it. I didn't really know anything when I was a young teenager. I was starting to get very interested in the things of God. And I've told this story before, and I only tell it again. It was nothing at that point, but it was a new experience for a young person who didn't have any understanding of the subject. I had grown up very poorly, never had a job, didn't have parents that gave me money. I had a grandma who sent us a check every December. She made sure it was at the beginning of the month of December so we wouldn't reject the box. So she sent us a box of goodies at the beginning of every December. And every year, a check came from that grandma. And it would usually be something like, there's $10 for each child in this, and the rest of it is for whatever you guys want. And a couple of years, there's $20 for each child in this check, and the rest of it is for whatever you guys want. From my memory in my young childhood, that was the only money I ever got. Once a year from my grandma, $10 or 20, or $20. That was the extent of the money I got. And because I didn't really have any money incoming and I thought money was something special, I saved it. And so, you know, you would spend it very, very sparingly. I was a kid of no money spending. In fact, I remember times, I should be ashamed of myself for this, but I remember times that we asked for ice cream and my dad would say, no, he didn't have any money. And so the kids would start talking, you know, we should buy ice cream. We'll buy ice cream. You know, if we each put in 50 cents or whatever, we can get ice cream. And I would stay out of it. I'd say, no, I'm not helping buy ice cream. And so the girls would go buy it and I would eat it. I know that it happened a number of times. I did help a few times when they said we should buy ice cream, but I know there was a few times that I said I would not because I only had $30 and I didn't want to spend it. And so when I got to be somewhere in my teens, I forget how old I was, I had $40 and some cents, if I remember right. $40 and some pennies, no cents. And my heart began to be interested in the things of God, and all of a sudden, whether or not I had that money or not made absolutely no difference to me. And the turning point came to my heart one day when I decided that I should take all of that money and I should do something for God with it. And so I did. I gathered all my money that I had together. I didn't, if I remember right, I did not save myself a penny. I was being so generous compared to how I felt about money when I was growing up. I was being so generous. I got everything that I had. I went and gave it to my dad and I asked him to use it to print a book. And I cannot tell you, the following short time after that, as my life went on, money started coming in. I started making money. I started at the same time as that when I was really getting serious about serving God. I started buying books at the same time. I remember one year, we always went once a year to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we always got to go to the bookstores, and I wanted to buy some books. I only had just a few dollars, and one of the guys in the church came up to me, and I think it was $100, I can't remember anymore. It was either $50 or $100. One of the guys in the church came up to me, and he handed me this big bill of money just before we left for Grand Rapids. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, to me, $100 was like a lifetime worth of income. I mean, it was about all I had seen in my life, probably up till that time. And I started, at that point, I started giving things to God. And I never was taught tithing when I was growing up, and I never dared to give 10% to God. I was giving stuff to God everywhere, all the time. And I can tell you from the time I was 18 till this day, there has never been a year that my financial situation did not increase in life. There was never a year that I didn't do better this year than last year. It has been 19 years that my business has been running, and there's never been a year in 19 years that sales haven't increased. And that's the way my life has gone. But I learned way back there when I was a teenager and I had no income at all, I learned that giving to God did something in your life. God respected and honored my stupid little $40 gift. That's what he says here. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty. Now, the fact of the matter is I'm always, nonstop, always broke. I never have anything extra. But I have never wanted a thing that I needed. God has always provided everything that I ever needed, and quite well most of the time. But I want you to notice that it's almost as if he wants to make this the same part of the story. He says, my son, again in verse 11. But this is immediately following the verse that says, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty, when he says, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. And I think immediately, when we're talking about this subject, I think immediately back to Job. And you know, Job had a life where he did honor God with his substance, and he did do what God told him to do with the things that God had given him. And God did bless him for it. But there came a moment in Job's life when God took it all away. And it was not because Job did anything wrong. It was not because Job failed to give something to God. It was not because Job had committed any sin. It was simply because God does put these things in the life of every person who is His. And you will see this as we go through the chapter, and we have a commandment and a promise, and a commandment and a promise, and a commandment and a promise all through the chapter. But right in the middle of the chapter, he says, you know what? I'm sorry, there is actually exceptions to every one of these promises. You are never, ever, ever, ever going to be a person who wholly obeys everything that's in here and who has nothing in life but blessing. Because it's every son. Whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth. He always does it. So there may come a time in your life where you say, I've been faithful with everything I'm doing. And look at Michael back there. You know, we could all sit here and we could look at Michael and say, Michael, you were dumb. You fell off a roof. But he wasn't. He wasn't. You say, Michael, did you sin? Is God saying something to you about sin in your life? You know what? He might have sinned, but most likely, even if he did, we all sin a little sometimes. Most likely, even if he did sin, his falling off the roof wasn't connected, most likely. I don't know. If it is, he better do some repenting right now. But you know what? The fact of the matter is, Michael could have been doing everything right in his life, and God still has things to say to Michael. And he's got things to say to every single person who's sitting here, unless you don't love him. If you don't love him, he's going to say something to you at the judgment day. But it's for the people that love him now that he's saying things to right now. And there isn't anything that you can do. There is no level of holiness that you can get to that exempts you from the hand of God in your life. In fact, probably one of the worst situations we've ever read about in the life of a Christian was that of Job, of whom it is said he was righteous. Like nobody else in the earth, he was righteous. So verse 13, he says, happy is the man that findeth wisdom and that getteth understanding, for the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gains thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay hold on her, and happy is every one that retaineth her. Now, we just went through a little story a couple verses back about giving to God and the fact that God blesses us for what we do. But that is temporal. It's in this life. And it is not to be compared or put in the same category as the verses that we just read, where we look at happy is the man that findeth wisdom and the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. Those of us who learn to be wise, learn to fear God, learn to listen to our teachers, learn to do the things that God says are right, learn to believe Him, the gain that we get from that is better than the gain of the richest people on earth. Not only does it bring length of days, it also does bring riches. That's one of the benefits of wisdom. But it also brings ways of pleasantness. It brings paths of peace. This wisdom is like a tree of life. And he says, the Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth. By understandings he established the heavens. By his knowledge the depths are broken up and the clouds drop down dew. What God did with wisdom was the creation that we see. That's what he did with wisdom. Now, if we could consider standing on nothing, looking at nothing, talking with our voice, and creating a universe, if God did that in 6 days, a little bit of getting a little bit of his wisdom, imagine what you might be able to do yourself. You might be able to accomplish some things with a little bit of God's wisdom. My son, verse 21, let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. So shall they be life unto thy soul and grace unto thy neck. Then shalt thou walk in the way safely, and thy foot shall not stumble. When thou liest down, thou shalt not be afraid. Thou shalt lie down, and thy sleep shall be sweet. Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it cometh, for the Lord shall be thy confidence, and shall keep thy foot from being taken. These promises here to those who pursue and who hold on to wisdom are the kinds of things that every person on earth wants to be the story of their life. Every person on earth wants those things to be their story. Now, as we come to the end, there's some smaller random subjects here that we will just go through very quickly for the interest of them. Withhold not good, verse 27. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. That'd be a good one for kids to adopt when they're growing up at home towards their brothers and sisters. If you have the ability to do something good for your brothers and sisters, my, wouldn't that make a happy house? That would make a happy house. Apply it to your neighbor. Don't say to your neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I'll give you, when you've got something to do for them today. If you can help your neighbor, help your neighbor. Devise not evil against your neighbor, seeing he dwells securely by thee. Now here's another one for a family. Strive not with a man without cause, if he hath done thee no harm. I think it's kind of funny sometimes the things that kids fight over. I was going for that truck when my brother picked it up. You know, it's amazing that God didn't give brothers the ability to read the minds of their other brother across the room and know that he was going for that truck and therefore I should leave it on the floor. You know, most of the time when we fight with people, whoever we're fighting with has done us no harm. Most of the time. Sometimes they might have said something. I don't think words do much to harm us. But now verse 31, envy not. Envy thou not the oppressor and choose none of his ways. None of his ways. You can look out over the people who are successful in life in spite of the fact that they did things wrong. I have always wondered sometimes why so many things that I do in business work so poorly. And I have been tempted over and over and over and over again in the last 19 years to read books. I see a book, How to Become a Millionaire. Now, I'm not really looking to become a millionaire, but I would like the things that I do in business to be successful. So, same principles of how to become a millionaire would apply in some respect to how to run a successful business. So I see a book like that. I should read that. And over and over and over and over again, I have been tempted to read those kind of books. And every time I have seen one, God has said, I know what God says about it. He has said, no. That book, that is not a Christian author. God has principles here on money. He has principles here on work. And if the principles that God gives to you on money and work do not create millionaires, then we have no business being millionaires. And the principles that some person who does not love God are likely to feed you have about a 99% chance of being false. And I say, well, I know the Bible, I know the Word of God, I know the difference between right and wrong, I can read that, I can glean some ideas, and I can chuck the rest. But my conscience has never let me read one of those books. I think for good reason, because I don't think they're of God. Choose none of His ways. Not choose the good part of His ways, choose none of His ways. The curse of the Lord is in the house of the wicked, but He blesseth the habitation of the just. You guys all want that, don't you? Blesses the habitation of the just. Surely He scorneth the scorners and giveth grace unto the lowly. Now this is the verse that's quoted in James when it says He resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Slightly different in the way it comes out when it comes from Hebrew to English versus Greek to English. In the New Testament, it first went from Hebrew to Greek and then from Greek to English. But they, at this point, in the English, doesn't make any difference to us. They're both inspired of God because one's in the Old Testament, one's in the New Testament. And they come out a little bit different, but He scorneth the scorners, or He resists the proud, but He gives grace to the humble. And every single one of us want that to be a description of our home, a home where God gives grace. And the very last verse, the wise shall inherit glory. What we want for our homes is at the end, we want to leave our children something to inherit that is of the glory of God. I can tell you guys now, those of you, some of you are young with young families. Some of you are older than that. It's not too late to start if you didn't start when you were young. But I'm talking more to young people tonight than to anybody else. You all want the blessings of the Word of God and the principles of God to attend your life. But we sometimes would like some of our own ideas instead of the ideas of God to be the guiding principles of our life. And you cannot have both. You are going to have to choose now. You follow God's ideas if you want God's blessings. You follow your ideas, you will get your fruit. You mix your ideas and God's ideas. Say you want the things of God, but you're going to really focus on the things that you like. You don't say that, it's just what you do. Then you're going to get a little bit, perhaps, of the blessing of God and a lot of the fruit of your own doings. The fruit of your own doings isn't worth anything. It can't bless you. It can't give you an inheritance. It can't help you. And remember now, we're not looking at what happens with the choices you make today. We're not looking at what happens next month or next year. We're looking at what happens at the end of your life. We're looking at how it continues through life. We're looking for length of days and long life and peace. Destroying the work of God in a family does not happen in a day. It happens in a lifetime or a half a lifetime. And so there's a job here. I don't care who you are tonight, there's a job here for you. If you're a father and you're talking to your son, there's a job for you. You better be speaking the words of God. If you're a son and you're listening to your father, there's a job for you. You should be listening. And we, together, without a father, without a son, without anything, have got a chapter here in the Bible that's God speaking to us. And he tells us a whole bunch of things here. If you do this, you get this. If you do this, you get this. He tells us a whole bunch of good principles for life. So, give me a year. When we go through, when I get ready someday to go through the book of Proverbs, maybe I will someday, we'll cover this chapter again. But for now, we will quit.